Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You know, I don't think we're moving too quick, and I don't think you do either.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 4, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. Let me save you the trouble, Tara. Site business right up top. Don't forget, you can buy an ad on this very podcast if you want to wish somebody a happy birthday or tell them they're a big jerk or a squeef. $50. Go to previously.tv/ads. And you can also buy a business ad, but that'll cost you twice as much because you're making money. That'll be $100. So previously.tv/ads. And now on with the show.
Attention, our producer, the Dread Pirate, David T. Cole.
Hi.
Hello.
Shall we talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, in which no one is gay?
Sure.
Or in the military?
No one asked us to, and I guess we could not tell anyone what happened in this episode, because not a lot, but let's just do it.
It's true. We could also just skip it, and no one would probably notice or care, but we are professionals, so let's do this.
Sure.
Starting with our C-plot, Brandon and Kelly. Starting with our C-plot, Brandon and Kelly pursue equally improbable job opportunities and, briefly, a lawyer. So Kelly is sitting up moping that Brandon, who's in New York for his extremely, as I already said, improbable interview at the New York Chronicle, hasn't called. She doesn't know why. Bitch, you broke up. That's why. Like, what the fuck?
Jesus.
I will say, even though Brandon's name is in the title of the storyline, he does not actually appear in this episode, and I'm happy about it. But Kelly and Donna decide to watch TV and have an inane conversation about how Kelly deciding on her next move is the same as choosing what to watch. Blah, blah, blah. Later, Donna's scribblarium has exploded out into the living room, and she and Kelly discuss this in clip 2.
I have so much work, and I can't imagine doing any of it right now.
So don't.
I have deadlines.
Blow them off.
Customers depending on me.
Disappoint them.
I can't.
Why not?
I hate rhetorical questions.
Especially those. Shut the fuck up, Kelly. Go find another clinic to run.
Yeah, those also aren't rhetorical questions, by the way.
Yeah, they aren't even questions.
Yeah. Why can't you disappoint your...
But, guys.
Yeah.
What is a rhetorical question?
Nope.
So apparently at the funeral, which we'll get to, Kelly had an epiphany, as we hear in clip 3.
No, I'm not playing clip 3. Screw you guys.
I laughed.
I was thinking about my life. And then Noah got up and he freaked out and ran off. And I realized I have no problems. No deaths, no moments that I can't get back.
So you feel good knowing he feels bad?
First of all, can we talk about the fact that Kelly describes Noah freaking out and running off like he was being pursued by a bee? Like, it was a funeral for his parent. Can we have some gravitas at all, ever, on the show?
Also, though, having a character be like, I have no problems, is just great writing. Like, essentially where this is starting her off from is like, oh, the conflict in my life is none. Anyway, but no, that's not what she means. She says she doesn't want to have regrets later like Noah does about his dad. And her decision is that she's not going to have regrets about her life. She's going to live it, which is meaningless. And then tries to get Donna to come with her for a walk on the beach and work later. And while Donna is not my favorite, it is very annoying when you have to work and someone is doesn't and is trying to get you to just goof off with them. and making you whining at you for not being able to hang out. But anyway, Donna's a doormat, as we know, so she is convinced to do what Kelly has requested. And apparently they've walked from the beach to Robertson, which is in West Hollywood, like pretty far inland, which, no, that would take hours. But Kelly spots some himbo and walks over to stand near him until he notices her, which he doesn't. But Kelly notices a vacant store in this little strip mall or whatever that they're in and tells Donna it's going to be Donna's store. And Donna, who has no self-confidence, dismisses the idea out of hand. But Kelly ignores her and calls the posted number on his on her cellular phone. And the next day, they're still on the same not on the same page about this venture when they're getting a tour from the real estate agent. Like, why didn't Donna at some point, if she was really committed to not do this, just be like, well, go have fun. We're not having this conversation because
only on TV does this happen. This happens like five times in the last couple of episodes of Animal Kingdom. Like, not really a spoiler, but like only on TV are people like, I don't know. And like arguing about it in front of the broker. Like, that's not right. How that really works.
No. And then the broker leaves them in the store without like locking up. Like, she's like, well, take a look around. Bye.
I know. Like, I'll let you two discuss this. I'm going to Century City. Okay. Talk to you later.
Right. So Kelly's trying to tell Donna they can run the store together and is weirdly holding Donna's hand like she's about to kiss it when the cute guy from the day before just wanders in. His name is Matt. He has an office upstairs. Donna gets a phone call. Kelly says they're thinking of putting in a boutique. He says he has lots of construction specialists he can refer. And she guesses he runs a temp agency because electricians definitely get hired out that way, Kelly, dummy. But he says he's a lawyer and the construction guys are his former clients. And being Kelly, she seizes up when he finally has to spell it out to her that the guys are ex-cons, as though she didn't learn anything from the ex-con story of the clinic patient last season. When we come back to the storyline, we get a sign outside for the little mall, and it is, I swear to God, the ugliest sign in the world. It's in four different fonts, and it has like, it's like clothing, coffee, no, Java is at the bottom, clothing, collectibles, gifts, something. It's please go to the visual aids at privyously.tv and see this, because it is like, I hope it was a piece of set dressing, because if that was real in the world, then Los Angeles should have been burned to the ground. But anyway, one of Matt's guys is already in the shop working. So I guess Kelly just decided to go ahead with this major life decision while Donna is supporting her boyfriend during his latest run in with the law, which we'll get to. Like, there at no point is there a conversation, as we've just said, where Donna's like, OK, let's do the store. They're just all of a sudden moving in that day.
Yeah. And I think there's a reference to incorporation papers at some point. Maybe in the next episode, like, yes, okay, I mean,
yeah,
excuse me.
So we'll hear again in the next storyline how Matt is broke. But here we find out it's because he used to be at a white shoe law firm and now represents low income defendants with compelling sob stories. I'm paraphrasing, like his current client, a bad husband whose wife is suing for sole custody of their 3 month old child right up St. Kelly's alley until the client shows up. And it's Lenny Christopher Daniel Barnes. Prince Eric from The Little Mermaid, also the domestic abuser whose wife was treated at the clinic last season and stalked subsequently by Kelly. And he apparently doesn't remember Kelly, and she says he looks familiar but can't place him. But then Matt gives Kelly's Polaroid to Lenny to take their picture. And okay, again, I watched the show carefully enough to take detailed notes, and yet I backed up to the previous scene with Kelly and Donna together to confirm that at no point did they agree to go into business together, and they did not. And yet when we see them again, as I said, it's the same day. They're bringing in fixtures they got from question mark, and there's already a partly completed display in the window, and Donna's scribbles are lying around. It's so dumb.
And one of the fixtures is apparently a headboard that used to belong to Liberace. What?
I mean, this in
I guess you can't clock Kelly for like just being like, okay, well, I want to do this, and Donna eventually will go along because she's Donna.
Right.
But it's not like the writers know that, or really anything else that ever happened. We'll get to that in the next episode.
Yeah, we will. Oh my God. Anyway, so Matt comes in and has a chat with Donna, which we'll get to, and then leaves his papers behind, which when Kelly returns, she, of course, feels free to look at. Though to be fair to her for once, stupid Matt has clipped a photo on the outside of the folder, which shows Lenny's ex, Leah, and their not three-month-old baby.
You're not casting them for a commercial about investment banking. Why is this clipped to the in there at all, much less on the outside?
I know. And why did they get prints of this photo where, like, Leah is smiling and Lenny is staring down the camera like he's going to murder the photographer? Like, go back to Sears and tell them that you want a retake. This is terrible. But anyway.
Oh, God.
Kelly's memory is duly jogged, and the next day she goes up to return Matt's file to him and be a bitch about it in clip four.
Hey, you're here early.
I was having trouble sleeping. I wondered how you managed to.
I realized I left these, but you guys were already gone.
I wasn't snooping, but I saw that picture, and I do know him. Actually, his wife. Your client is a monster.
Wait, should I be hearing this right now?
I used to work at a free clinic, and Leah, his wife, came in after he had beaten her.
Are there any records?
I saw the bruises.
Did she file a formal complaint?
I'm talking to you like a friend, and you're acting like a lawyer.
Lenny has a right to representation, okay? Just like your pal Noah. Or maybe you don't think I should defend him either.
Lenny hit a woman.
And Noah drove drunk. But just because I represent them doesn't mean I condone what they did. The Constitution protects everyone's rights, okay? Even a guy like Lenny.
That's a nice speech. I'm sure battered women across the nation will be moved to tears.
I don't know where to start with this exchange, except HIPAA, for one, which was definitely in effect at this time.
Yeah.
Also, Matt asking her, like, did she ever file a formal complaint? Like, shouldn't you know that, counselor, if you're defending her husband? Like, he would know that.
And also, he's not even defending him. He's representing him in a custody dispute, which, like, do you literally practice every kind of law? Will there also be a mergers and acquisitions storyline at some point?
Yeah. Anyway,
also,
then
Kelly, you've known each other 2 minutes, and yes, he's talking to you like a lawyer. That's what he is. You don't get to have it both ways, butt out. He's a lawyer. What do you want him to do?
Yeah. So then Kelly gets a cell phone call from Brandon, and hilariously, Jason Priestley cannot even be arsed to be filmed for his half of this conversation. Like, all we see and hear is Kelly. But it's soon interrupted by the arrival of Matt. He had the Polaroid framed. And without hanging up on Brandon, she asks if Matt is dropping the case, which he is not. And she's like, thanks for the memories. And he observes that she's bad at giving second chances. And she's all like Leah gave Lenny. And he doesn't even bother arguing before giving her a look and stalking out. And I gather that, I mean, I've only seen this episode so far. In the next one, I assume that they're like trying to steer these two towards each other. Yes.
Yeah.
But if this is supposed to be like trying to replicate the, you know, front page banter relationship that Brandon and Susan had, like, it's really hostile and the stakes are rather higher. So this is not quite working the way they, I guess, are hoping that it would.
Yeah. Also, Kelly isn't high strung. She's just a coos.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Also, her fellow columnist on this front page lack of charisma gazette is a complete charisma suck. Like, this guy, I don't even remember the actor's name.
Who cares?
Exactly. It's too bad. We're stuck with him for the duration. Spoiler. Yeah. Like, this is not a brief flirtation.
He's cute, at least.
Yeah, he's cute. He's like not offensive. He's doing the best he can with shitty writing, but it's like, this is what happens when you're a new character in season 9 of 90210. Yeah. You're this is what you get. Vincent Young and this.
I mean, I guess it makes sense for them finally to have a lawyer in the cast so that anytime anyone gets arrested, which is frequent, he can just start representing them, which I'm going to guess is what occurs.
I think so.
All right.
It's been a while since I've seen these episodes, and they are so flavorless that I don't really remember. I think heroin comes back into our lives.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. That's something to look forward to. On to the B plot. Val's got drunk ex drama and horny stepfather drama. So everyone at Noah's father's memorial service, this captain of industry, all the guests have to stand at the cemetery because they're so broke they could not rent chairs. And Mrs. Hunter says a bunch of bullshit about how much it meant to Mr. Hunter when Noah was born. And because this show has no institutional knowledge, there's zero mention of Noah's brother, who was like a pretty major part of last season's storylines. Like, he does not even show up or come up in anyone's speeches, but whatever. Then Noah gets up to speak, God help us, and he ditches his notes and tells a story in clip 5.
My father always told me, when you're going on a trip, take all your clothes and all your money and lay down in the bed. And you take half the clothes and all the money.
That's actually pretty good advice.
You take half the clothes and twice the money. Like,
oh,
this is why you're broke. Your father doesn't know basic dad maxims.
Also,
Dave Sr. would never make this mistake. P.S.
Also, is it necessary to lay out your money?
No. Like, do you have to? Is it in piles according to currency?
Anyway, he recites his father's birth and death years, job title, and martini preference before taking off, Donna chasing after him, and Kelly tells Donna to let him go. So then Carl has turned into a cleaner who called Val from his honeymoon because he wanted to hear Val's voice, and Val is justly disgusted, and since Abby is on her way in to meet them at lunch, Val tells him to shut it. And then Abby finds Val at the club to say that Carl left and that Abby should ask Val why, and then says he's getting an annulment. Like, that's your headline, I would think, because otherwise it just makes it seem like he went out for coffee or something. But Val looks guilty as hell, but denies there's anything that Abby should know. And when Abby begs her for more, Val just says that Carl is a jerk and Abby thought Carl was the one, and Val hugs her and looks only moderately guilty. Please go to the visual aid so you can see her like biting her lip as though she's trying to figure out how to tell her mother like she spilled a glass of red wine on her white skirt or something.
I'll just say it once now so I don't have to return to it. But like, once again, there is no consistency even within the episode of how guilty Valerie feels.
Yeah. Or about what she is specifically feeling guilty either.
Yeah. And I, at this point in the episode, I'm still not clear as to whether she just feels murderously guilty for having killed her father or actually set up. Oh my God, like they just abuse this character so badly, and I am so excited for her to make her escape. Let's get on with it. God.
So elsewhere, Noah is fully drinking from a fifth of vodka while driving and gets pulled over for driving erratically and for an open container. And the cop makes him do a sobriety test and he nails it in clip 6.
199, 98, 96, 97. I can count great.
Now, if you'll recite the alphabet for me.
All right. A for attitude. B for badge. C for car. What?
You're under arrest for driving under the influence.
I'm not even finished yet. I'm still on D. You got Daniel. You got Dad. You got Death, right? Huh?
Step this way, please.
We were just praising him for being good at acting drunk. Like, this is like a kid in a fourth grade play trying to act drunk.
yeah, Death, right? I was just reminiscing on Facebook with an old church youth group friend of mine about when I played Imogene in the greatest Christmas pageant ever, which involves like a face turn for this character.
Yeah.
And I had to be like crying at the end. And there was this whole like Rube Goldberg situation involving a wet paper towel in which I was supposed to be crying. I was crying laughing and like it's just dripping everywhere. Anyway, I found myself thinking about that amateurish moment a lot lately on this podcast. I wonder why.
So Kelly is mid-flirt with Matt when Donna comes in to say that Noah's been arrested for drunk driving and that he called Val, who's the one who just called Donna. And Kelly guesses that Noah was just too upset or embarrassed to call Donna herself. And she's all sarcastic, like, I'm sure that's the reason. And Matt asks if Noah has an attorney. And Kelly's like, he does now, because presumptuous much, that is Kelly. And then Val pulls into the club parking lot and orders Carl to stay away from her before we even see or hear him, which is kind of funny. But of course, he doesn't listen and starts bugging her about not returning his calls, which she says is because she hates him. And he's all, you didn't hate me in Vegas. But she has to tell him that hatred is a prerequisite for her sleeping with someone, which explains David, to be honest. Carl tells her he slept with her thinking they had something, and Val recaps the last few episodes from her HIV fears to her pledge to lead a decent life to fucking her mom's fiance. Like, we've all been here, and also don't hang a lampshade on what an implausible mess all of this is.
Yeah, really.
And then we're back at good old Pawnee City Hall, the show's default not a courthouse for Noah's arraignment. Donna has brought Matt to meet Noah, who confirms that he didn't call Donna out of shame. And Matt introduces himself, and Donna tells Noah she hired him. And Noah is maybe still drunk in clip 7.
Next case, the state versus Noah Hunter. The defendant will be held to answer the charge of driving under the influence of alcohol and possession of an open container. How do you plead?
Matt Durning, Your Honor. I represent Mr. Hunter. We haven't had time to discuss the...
Not guilty.
You recently advanced the theory that because Vincent Young is from Philadelphia, it might explain his really weird slurry pronunciations.
Uh-huh.
Generally speaking, I would say no. I think he just has a mush mouth.
Yeah.
But not guilty. Total Philly.
I mean, not that he should be like not guilty, like he's fucking Hugh Grant or something. But like, yeah, it's not good. Anyway, the case is scheduled for the next day, which I doubt it. And on their way out, Matt tries to build his not guilty case by asking if there are problems with with Noah's car alignment or something to explain the erratic driving. Or maybe Noah was driving perfectly and they had no right to pull him over. And Noah's impressed that Matt could argue it either way because he was born yesterday. And Matt stops the walk and talk to tell him what charges he might be facing, and also to say he's charging Noah $300 an hour. Higher than his usual rate because he's strapped for cash at the moment, and also he thinks drunk drivers are gross. Preposterous, but I approve. And then Val is doing inventory at the Peach Pit after dark when a pathetic Abby comes in to ask if Carl called. And I'm fascinated by the logistics of this because they're in town visiting, right? They don't live there. Did Carl leave and like tell her to get her own rental car or something? Like,
I had this question in the next episode too. Like, does she just live here now? Like,
yeah.
What? Yeah. I mean, I guess everyone who is supposed to be from back east just like moves to L.A. and doesn't tell anyone. See the Hunters and their fully furnished, like stereotypical San Simeon that is for set. Yeah. I mean, guys, just make a book and read it.
Yeah.
Before you write these stupid episodes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Val lies that Carl didn't tell her anything, and apparently Abby's there having been summoned by Val and in no mood for what's about to happen, which is this clip 8.
When you said it was important, I thought maybe you'd talk to him.
This isn't about Carl. It is, but it's also about something that's much more important.
My husband just left me. What could be more important than that?
Our relationship?
Whatever it is, it can wait.
It can't.
It has to.
Mom.
I don't want to hear it.
I slept with Carl.
No, you didn't.
In Vegas. The night before your wedding.
You are so sick.
Yeah, well, sleeping with your father will do that to you.
You seduced Carl.
I looked his way. He looked back.
I had no idea you hated me so much.
You knew. You knew I was being abused and you didn't do anything.
When I found out, I insisted he get help.
You didn't make it stop.
I tried.
You failed. I didn't. Dad didn't commit suicide. I killed him.
Oh, God.
Da-na-na-na. Da-na-na.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was really no indication that she was sleeping with Carl out of vengeance. Like, she wasn't trying to, nothing tipped that was her reason. Like, it really, in the episode where it actually happened, it just made it seem like she was around and she felt like being flirty and like, Abby had nothing to do with it. Like, he was just present to me anyway.
Yeah. Or like she failed to resist the urge, like she failed to postpone gratification. And then we have the shot of her like having the self-loathing weepies.
Yeah. Which but no one, like, was there to witness. So, like, what is her motivation? Like, this, well, it's all over the map. This whole
again,
thing.
It's like, look, it's not that I don't think that a survivor of this kind of abuse might have some, I don't know how else to put it, like, obscure motivations for the specific sorts of acting out that occur.
Right.
That part is believable, but then the writers have absolutely no idea of how to write this. And so there's this, like, self-hatred whiplash with Val, except when she's, like, a funny schemer in the Amanda Woodward mold, which is, like, I'm not sure you can be, and I think they actually saddled Amanda with a similar storyline in late stage Melrose, but it's like, guys, you know, have some sensitivity to why she might be doing this and let her be this way either all the time or get her some help or turn her into just like a one-dimensional vamp, which is more fun and more to your skill set.
Yeah.
Like, my notes are like, you know, I hate saying this given the subject matter, but who cares? Like, which Val is it in this scene? We don't even know. So, I mean, again, sorry, but who cares?
Yeah, it's very bad. It's to the point where I wonder, like, if originally her storyline was going to be that Val does get HIV, and then Tiffany Amber Thiessen was like, I'm just going to leave instead. So why don't you do something else? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. So then there's this, like, Byzantine dynastic thing. I mean, but it won't be long now. So
no, it's true. Anyway, there's more to the storyline. But first, we have a message from Laura in Texas. Well, howdy, Laura. Sorry.
The very kind and generous Laura doesn't have a personal message for us to deliver to someone in her life. Instead, she has a personal message for us. We can't improve upon this, so here's what Laura wrote. Quote, I've been with you from the beginning. I even rewatched / hate watched along with y'all in solidarity. From the awkward twincestuous first season through the summer of deception and all the way up to the wedding that wasn't.
Laura continues, I detoxed myself off orange juice and diet pills. I read The Blaze, which a lot of parents read, and The Beat. I was there for every Brandon Bray, Steve Smirk, Brenda Stomp, Donna Stuff, Dylan's Madness and Badness, and Cat Butt Kelly's baby voice. I am and will always remain totally gay for Val's magnificent boobs.
Well put. But she goes on, like Dead Scott, thanks for the tip, Dick, and Josh Richland, it's time this extern exits this trash fire in spectacular fashion. Know that you'll always be so precious to me, but now I choose me. I'll continue to listen to the podcast. It totally makes my Monday. But I can no longer expose my retinas nor my gray matter to this fucking dreck. I'm out. Leave your message at the beeperoonie. This is great.
Laura, thank you for this delicious cumin of a message. To thank you for being our own Texas angel, we've made a list of 5 ways you should copy the show's Texan characters, Deshaun Hardell and Mariah Murphy.
Number 1, like Deshaun, you should resist, or really ignore, any attempts by Brandon to teach you anything.
Like Mariah, you should support your local public library. Don't worry about the racist caricature of a librarian the show presented. Real librarians are basically Marxists.
Number 3, like Deshaun, you should cockblock Brandon whenever you get a chance.
Number 4, like Deshaun, you should stand by and maybe snicker a little when Donna does a move called the Texas dip.
And finally, number 5, like Mariah, you should believe in angels. Not the heavenly hosts, but real angels like you are to us, dear Laura.
We appreciate you for staying with us and for all the torment to which you've already subjected yourself by revisiting the show.
And we certainly affirm your decision to stop watching the show. Lay down that burden and let us carry it for you.
On behalf of all of us, thank you, Laura, in Texas. Back to the storyline. At the Peach Pit After Dark, after he's been sprung, Noah is shitty to Val about being lazy on the job and for telling Donna about his arrest. And Val is like, I've got my own problems. Like, seriously, shut up, Noah. She says that if Abby calls, she's not there. Yeah, what happened to your conversation after you told her you murdered your husband? Like, she just left.
Yeah, she's like, I have a petty at 3. We'll talk about this later. Cool plan.
Anyway, Noah asks, what if Abby comes by? And Val says that's a good point, so she'll go with him to pick up the cappuccino machine from the shop. And their conversation continues as if Abby and Val's issues are just regular mother-daughter shit, and it's such bad, ridiculous writing in clip 9.
You guys aren't getting along?
You could say that.
Well, I mean, you're an adult. What's she gonna do, ground you?
No, she can tear me up in 3 million pieces with one look and 3 sentences.
You wanna talk about it?
Do you wanna hear about it?
Absolutely not.
Good, let's go.
Let's go. Let's pick it up.
Let's pick it up.
Stop making Vincent Young ad lib. He is very bad.
Let's pick it up. Like, this is not fucking playground basketball defense. You're going to lift a machine that they should deliver. That they should be delivering. Come on.
But also, like, she's talking about it like Abby was being mean about her outfit.
Like, I know. Like,
bad. Anyway, Matt comes by the store, see former storyline, to say that Noah does want Matt to represent him after all. And Donna says his arrest was right after his father's memorial and that his dad died from suicide. So then that night, drunk Noah is pounding on Donna's door to say he needs her. She's upset that he's drunk and drove himself there. Like, does she think talking about stuff helps? He would like to know. Instead of just saying yes, because duh, she says he has to get his shit together for court tomorrow, and says she'll do anything he needs her to do when he's sober. And he begs to stay with her tonight. She says she's going to call him a cab. To where? Where is he living? Like, where is this? You think he's going to go? He's broke and he sold his boat. Anyway, I guess he's not broke if he sold his boat, unless he gave all that money to his mother. Again, the fact that we don't know any of this is more bad writing on the show's part.
And this is also another badly acted drunk scene for Vincent Young, which is disappointing. But like, the weird pronunciations are pretty glorious. Like, I need ya. Like,
yeah.
Okay. No.
So Donna says she'll do anything for Noah, apparently, except letting him sleep in her home. But she lets him come in and wait for the cab while she calls. And then we join Abby and Val right after Val has apparently confessed to boning Carl some more. And Abby says that if Val doesn't turn herself in for her father's murder, Abby will. This is very stupid.
To the Buffalo police from Los Angeles?
Right. I don't know. So at City Hall... not the courthouse. Even though Matt has been on Noah's case for like a morning, he has found evidence that the breathalyzer machine wasn't properly calibrated. That is supposed to happen every 150 uses, and Noah was user number 154, and the judge is disgusted.
But the judge actually is like, are you arguing technicalities? Like, yes, that's what attorneys do in front of a judge, you stupid bitch. Fuck you.
But Noah's blood alcohol level was only 0.01% above the legal limit, but the judge isn't buying it, even after Matt says that Noah would plead to the open container, and the judge is like, no. Noah's fined $1,000, a year's probation, rehab, and court-ordered Alcoholics Anonymous, and Noah glares at the judge and then tries to be almost gracious to Matt in clip 10.
Thanks for the effort, I appreciate it. And I'd appreciate $1,100. I missed something here?
Yeah, you could have killed someone and I almost got you off. I don't know who to be more upset with, you or me.
A lawyer with a conscience, what do you know?
Pretty steep penalty.
Price I pay for letting my father get to me.
Will you talk to me about that, please?
Okay, few things. One, why is Noah acting surprised like Matt is not Nat? You do have to pay him for his services.
What the hell is that? It's not like if I get you out of this, it's free.
Right.
No.
Also, Donna, why are you staying with this guy when he has no remorse? Also, that's not a steep penalty. That's pretty light. He could have actually killed someone or himself. Anyway, quit cutting him slack just because he has issues, because he's not dealing with them. But anyway, out of Noah's pocket, Noah pulls index cards, which are clip 11.
The eulogy I never delivered.
The eulogy. It's my eugoogly.
Thanks, Zoolander.
I wrote it in the margins of my journal.
the ology. No one like had him come in and loop that line again. Like, even if he couldn't get it on the day, like, just tell him he is bad at words.
An ology is like when you tell somebody they have cancer.
Yeah. Donna says that she would like to read it, which I assume is because she doesn't want to hear him try to read it out loud. And I feel that. But then apparently she waits all night to actually read it on the deck in the dark. And we have to hear Vincent Young struggle his way through this bad writing anyway in clip 12.
I remember my dad in bits and pieces, like the night he came into my room.
Phrasing.
I'm a little kid. I'm supposed to be asleep hours ago. So I pretend. Turns out he's been pretending too. To be strong. Because when I open my eyes, he's at the window with his shoulders moving up and down. Because he's been crying. Then he goes. After he closed the door, I hear him say, "Good night, Noah." Through a closed door. There's always this closed door between us. It's locked now with no key in sight. He took his with him. I can't find mine.
I really wish I had the clip handy so we can contrast and compare, but for anybody who's watched Clone High, this is the same line reading. There's nothing in her rule book that says a giraffe can't play football.
Yeah, are we also supposed to think he was drunk when he wrote this? Like, no one gave him any direction for how he should read this, like, as the voice in Donna's head?
Well, and not for nothing, but, like... I remember my dad in bits and pieces, like, just say my memories are fragmented, because this sounds like when he killed himself, he blew himself up with a bomb. And then he's like, when he would come to my room at night, like, given the other storyline, could we? And then his shoulders are going up and down, like, he could be choking on a pretzel. I don't even know what the fuck is going on. Like, I need you to give me the Heimlich, Noah. Oh.
Oh, oh so God. Bad. Anyway, that's it for our B plot. On to the A plot, sophiescon.com.
Oh,
so,
God.
Sophie tries to sneak out of David's room in the middle of the night, but he wakes up and busts her for doing it a third consecutive night. She chalks it up to their moving very fast, also that he snores. She's still on the waiting list for a dorm room, she says. And when he sounds dubious, it's because... he thinks she wants to keep living with Steve and not that she's not a student. And what if David wanted her to live with him? But when she dares him, he doesn't actually offer that. So then Sophie's new scam is that she wrote a thing about some club and Steve is putting Janet in the position of telling Sophie to her face that it's fine, but it's not a column. Steve, an excellent publisher, has an answer. Clip 13.
Well, then we'll call it Sophie's scene, Sophie's suggestion, Sophie's...
Yeah, something like that. We'll run my review, my picture, and your picture.
It's a good idea.
No, Steve, I think that this is a great idea. Well, at least Brandon would think so.
What's that? A website.
Mm-hmm. People will be able to access articles online, so we'll expand our reader base, we'll get more subscribers, more advertisers.
This is a good idea.
Yes, the web has been great for small publishers, as we all know.
Yes. Exhibits A through C. Yikes.
Yeah. But also, okay, first of all, Steve's hair is like super duper blonde. All of a sudden, it's like the color
really
of corn kernels. You can see this in the visual aids. But also, subscribers, this thing is not a free giveaway, which is what I had been assuming. People are paying for the Beverly Beat.
Yeah, no, I thought it was just that thing that there were stacks of, like, in the post office and at the front of the bar.
Yeah,
no?
I thought it was like a down market LA Weekly type of thing.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Also, the problem with the column is not that it doesn't have a name, Steve.
Right. Anyway, Steve thinks a website is a good idea, but Sophie thinks a website's a good idea, but not the one that Janet is showing them. Let's all journey back, shall we, to the internet of 1998 in clip 14.
How many hits have you gotten so far? Well, it's only been a day. But after we register with the search engines and do a little promotion... No, you know what you need? One of those live digital cameras. so you can see the entire newsroom. You know, the hustle and the bustle, copy boys copying, editors editing, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's happening.
God, Janet for president.
What you can't hear is that the camera is panning around the newsroom, quote unquote, which is, as we know, completely empty except for the three of them. Like, none of the things that Sophie is describing are happening or will ever happen in this space.
Also, it's filthy. I think they're reusing some cracked in set from a few seasons ago with what's her face?
Yeah, Erica.
Erica.
Uh-huh.
It's like, guys, paint, please. It's disgusting.
Yeah. But of course, Steve and his boner think the camera is a good idea, and Sophie will get him a photo to go with her column right away. And then when we come back to the storyline, David is there to set up the old webcam. It is adorable. If you were alive in the 90s, you remember this thing. It's like round and white and with, you know, one little lens eye. So cute. Really takes me back. And then we're
and it
live.
It never mounted properly. It was like trying to tape Wally to the edge of a table. It was ridiculous. Anyway.
Let us journey once more into the past in clip 15.
It's only still pictures.
You know, that's how it works. It reloads every few seconds. But see, with this JPEG program that I have in here, it's almost like watching a time-lapse movie the whole day.
See, Janet. See, Janet gives Sophie her article to rewrite. You know, when they give an Oscar for most boring film, you better dust off that tux.
Janet! Janet!
Seriously. Oh, Janet.
But yeah, run. It puts up a JPEG every 3 seconds. This is the cutting edge of technology. It's
that was adorable. A real Buffalo Bill line. It puts up the JPEG every 3 seconds.
Sorry. Well, it does. Turns out Sophie's trying to get... Steve is trying to get Sophie working at the Beat so that he can spend time with her. And David suggests that maybe she's never around because she's not interested. But when Steve has such thoughts, he just works out until they dissipate, he says. And the first hit to the webcam page is for a shot of Sophie putting on lipstick. Like, that's not how traffic works. Like someone was Googling, show me a redhead putting lipstick on, and this came up. Like, no. By definition, that would have to be a coincidence, but whatever. Sophie preens for the camera. And
did
David
you just invoke Google? Because Google wasn't around yet.
Yes, I know.
Okay. Well, let's
escaped it.
Pop on it.
Lycos, go get it.
Yeah, Lycos. Yeah.
Someone asked Jeeves for a photo of Sophie.
Yahoo search.
Yeah. So then David is DJing from the Peach Pit after dark, which has in this booth that has like been constructed overnight, apparently, and already, despite its newness, has like shitty band posters all up in it. Like, this makes no sense. They're acting like this booth has been a fixture of the club all along. It's brand new. Anyway, he cancels a caller named Freddie that the way to get a girl to go to a party with him is not to ask her over the radio. And this is apparently going out live to the people that are at the Peach Pit after dark. Like, how did this joint venture between the college radio station that David is DJing for and the club come to be? None of this makes any sense, and yet it apparently goes on.
And he's doing that look at how much of an audio professional I am thing where he has one of the headphone ears like behind his ear so he can get room tone. Fuck off.
Yeah. So the next day, Sophie goes to David's to show him that she made it into print. The Beat is announcing her column with an inset black and white headshot of her on the cover, as if she is anyone would care about. Like, this is really going
They're
a long
also
way.
Detailing her to do yet another farticle on David fucking Lord Pissface Silver. So
that hasn't happened yet. That's still to come. But yes, David is all pissy congratulating her, I guess, because he thinks she flirted her way into it or more, and is also pissy because she left the show last night without seeing him. And he's also pissy because he's pissy most of the time. But anyway, she said she was too excited to sleep and drove around to find an open newsstand. Like, you live with the publisher and the editor. They can just give you as many copies as you want. But David essentially tells Sophie she's the cheapest whore ever in clip 16.
Steve, no, this is the only reason you're friends with him.
Take that back.
I wish I could.
Both of you shut up. Seriously, nobody cares.
Yeah. At the beat, it's still clear no one knows how the internet or publishing work in clip 17.
You said so yourself. No one's logging on to the articles.
Not yet, but they will.
Well, fine. In the meantime, they're loving the beat game. And she is a columnist.
Right, which is why we gave her a desk directly in front of the camera, because she's a columnist.
You're the one who wanted to go online, okay? I'm just adding a little salesmanship.
Put her in a wet t-shirt and I'm out of here.
Why not put her in a wet t-shirt? Who cares?
Honestly.
Can't be any worse than what you already do.
No kidding. So Steve goes over to see what Sophie wants to write up for her next column. And as Sarah said, she's got a great idea to do something on David. It's a weekly. It's existed for less than a year. If you gave 1/10 of a shit, you could have already read the back issues and found out David has been well covered by this publication already, including that he briefly contributed to it himself as a music
whatever
critic.
Whatever happened
for,
to that? Oh, who cares?
It. He had that great single that made his whole career. Anyway, Sophie's peg is his radio show, LOL. But Steve is an idiot and also not the editor. And also horny, all of which is, of course, why he readily approves this idea. And then fluffs her about what a big star she's going to be off her work at this podunk paper. LOL, 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 LOL. And Sophie preens for the camera some more. And that night, David is talking to that kid, Freddie, again about the girl he likes, who's going to a party with a bunch of her female friends. While this is happening, David sees Sophie and Steve walk out together. Like, does David think this girl is shining him on? Freddie wants to know. And David thinks, well, some girls you can't tell, and then ends the call without telling the caller it's over and takes off to go spy on Sophie and Steve. Turns out they're talking about David, but when he comes out, it's to try to use this caller's situation to make a point about theirs, which is when he finds out the reason Sophie's talking to Steve at this moment, anyway, is for her column on David. Back to David's fake situation, clip 18.
The caller says that she's afraid her friend is going to be crushed when she finds out. What I want to know is, should I have told her to come clean with a friend?
Does the girlfriend have a shot with this guy?
None.
Then I say, why add insult to injury? I hope you told her to keep it quiet.
You believe that?
Don't tell me you told her to tell the truth.
Yeah, I did, but I have a feeling she's not going to. Women. Women.
Women. Everyone hates them.
Especially the writers of this show.
It's true.
Jesus.
So then David meets Sophie at the beat at 3 a.m. per her request. Why does she have a key to the beat if she's a... But she says Freddie's gonna get his heart broken tonight because she's been where he is, and then says she can't hurt Steve because he believes in her and she doesn't want to let him down. And David suspects that part of Sophie's consideration is the free rent, but she insists that she's in the dorms next week. And he says they're not gonna sneak around anymore starting tomorrow, and leans in to kiss him, and their kissing is quite bad, which I'm going to chalk up to Laura Layton not wanting to touch Brian Austin Green's lips more than she is absolutely required to do, but I made a gif, you can see it in the visual aids. And so he remembers the webcam, and when the show's camera cuts to it, the webcam does look extremely judgmental. You can see this in the visual aids too.
As it should.
Yeah. So Sophie takes off her sweater and throws it onto the webcam while they get down to business. And then we cut back to the webcam and it just, the sweater slides off it, but it looks like the webcam has like shrugged it off and is like coming back up in the middle of it. I don't know why. It makes me laugh every time. I made a gif of it. You can see this in the visual aids too. It's completely ridiculous. So over at the Walsh house, Steve is up in the middle of the night eating grapes when he pulls up the beat homepage to Sophie, definitely looking like she's performing just for him, like staring at the camera. Anyway, then a very angry Steve shows up at David's house the next day with all of Sophie's stuff to give her. And David runs after him to say he didn't want to fuck Steve over, but Sophie made him, basically. And she comes out in two tank tops and like fucking yoga pants. And he barks at her to at least put a robe on. Like she could go to a kid's soccer game in what she's wearing, get a grip. But David says he was afraid it would be awkward. And it takes until now for Steve to say this is all because he saw them fucking on the webcam, complete with pelvic thrusts, which you can also see in the visual aids. And Sophie picks up her boxes to bring them inside, which is when David decides to slut shame her for sleeping with him in clip 19.
You know, an invitation would feel really nice right now.
You know, Steve wouldn't be this hurt if he didn't think he had some kind of chance.
He had a crush. Why do you think they call it that?
What day does the dorm open?
Next week. I don't know.
Sophie, you haven't been to class in weeks. You spent every dime of that student loan. There's no dorm.
So I have other priorities, so what?
I'm not using them, David. This has nothing to do with a place to stay.
I'm not that hard up for hospitality. I stayed with him because I liked him. I slept with you,
Sophie.
You just called me a whore.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. Like,
there's really no way to spin it. It's gross.
Yeah. So even but if he's not wrong, so just change the locks and tell her to find somewhere else to stay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get to have it both ways, dickhead.
Right. Yeah, also, like, she wasn't, you know, if you think that she was screwing over Steve, like, she was screwing him over with you. She wasn't, it's like you were unconscious while she was on you. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. Shut.
Anyway, even after that scene with Steve, Sophie has brought all her shit to sleep at the beat because she still has a key. Or should I say again, she ever had a key, because it makes no sense. But she's making up the couch when she turns back to the webcam. And you think she's about to strip, but she just gets on the couch and stares at the camera defiantly. It's dumb. Speaking of dumb, back to David's dumb radio show where fucking Freddie is telling David that this girl he wasn't ever dating cheated on him. And David tells him to slow down, as opposed to that they were not a couple. But he makes Freddie back up to tell the whole story. They were at this party. She asked him to get her a beer. He drove to Canada to get the kind she likes, which, what is the broadcast reach of this college radio station if he's talking to someone within reach of the Canadian border? Anyway, when he got back, she was in a car with Joe. What should he do? David thinks he should forget about her, but then says if he's by himself, he should join the club. But it's not much of a club because it happens to a lot of people. This must end. Sophie, please get out of here. And that's it for the episode.
Oh my God.
All right, I've listened to the whole thing. Why is it called Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Do you suppose?
Because of their lying?
Okay.
Because of Val's lying about her dad's murder, or that she shouldn't have told her mom? I don't know. It makes no sense. It's dumb. Are you asking us to justify it? Because we can't.
No, we can't. Just curious if there was, like, you know, an arrow pointing from title to actual event in this episode.
I mean, no, oh, like, shockingly, no. You know, I'm always like, they haven't used this one before. Like, they must have been like, oh, here's a generic title.
Right. Next episode, A Tale of Two Cities. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Changes. Ugh.
Led Zeppelin 4.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up with our MVP.
I don't know if actually Led Zeppelin had a fourth album. If they did, it's my MVP. Oh, that was a good one. I had that song from Thor.
Okay. My MVP is Janet doing what she can to make this show at all bearable.
Mine is the patrol cops who I'm pretty sure arrested Noah for having bad writing. And we're not having any of his shit. Good job.
Mine is the hypertext transfer protocol that that lets webcams exist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my sub MVP is the webcam shrugging off the sweater so it could it could film some sex in the beat office. Least valuable player. David, the proto men's rights activist.
Kelly, the HIPAA violator and bitch.
Yeah, that's fair. We have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing scones.
At Jillian Mallory on Twitter asks us to list 5 ways Steve has become a more mature and better man than Brandon. I mean, it's a low bar, but sure. Steve abides his responsibilities with regard to the paper. He's bad at it, but at least he's not fucking off to get a new job every chance he gets.
He knows how to use hair dye for gentlemen.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about Brandon's new auburn tresses this season.
His new old man's red rinse. Yeah. The Michael Douglas.
I was going to say the Sumner awful. Redstone, but yes, either way.
That too.
What else has Steve done that's more mature than Brandon? He's not still trying to be with Kelly after she broke up with him anymore.
Oh, yeah, true. He's no longer referring to women that he would like to have sexual intercourse with as Bebs.
As Bebs. Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. That just sort of happened.
Oh, bless you. And he's definitely dressing more maturely in that he is always in knit golf shirts and pleated pants, like he's on the way to the country club all the time. So let's say that makes sense.
Slash his 60th birthday.
That yeah. sneeze was rhetorical, by the way.
Next
nothing!
Time on Again
I get
with
nothing!
This.
I laughed.
No, you didn't.
What do you want? God.
Can I introduce Brandon's last episode or what?
Yes, please, God.
Okay. Now that David T. Cole's been freaked out and run off because he's being chased by a bee. Sing, Choirs of Angels, our Brate Noir and all-time LVP, Mr. Walsh, finally goes to Washington, but not before interminable boutique stuff and before Kelly is a bitch about it and everything else. You can and should be a bitch about our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm justifiably homicidal Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Lawyer with a Conscience, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, as always, is Beat Webcam David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.